Wednesday afternoon, ladies, here, Chavis Halvavis, Chav Ches Tammuz. We're in Chavis Halvavis, Yar Yichad Amaisa Perikei, and we're up to the enticement of the Yetzara about, well, we're in the middle of about Mesorah, Torah Shabbal Peh, and the next one will be about Schar Va'onesh. So we'll take it from there.
We
have a quorum.
Did
you get an email from Sonnenberg? Okay, because Mrs. Kagan probably won't even see the email till tomorrow.
Right.
Just letting you know.
Okay.
Okay, so we're learning Chaimus Halvavus, Yichud Hamaisa, and we're up to Perikei, and we're going after the Reka Klali, if I'm using the word correctly, about how the Yetzer Hara functions in general. He goes through different things, and he goes from the most subtle, well, not subtle, but the most theological, I would say it, the most theological, and he goes all the way with different enticements of the Yetzer Hara to more and more prust. Prust means gross, because, you know, a theological, ideological Yetzer Hara seems to be very intellectual, but then he gets more and more gross, but until the very end, it's like a wave. He starts a very, very intellectual and philosophical and ideological, then he gets into gross taivus of Yetzer Hara, and then it gets in the realm of Maisa, because that's the realm he went into after the idea Yetzer Hara, right? Veloso Suru, we say Achrei Levavchem. So Levavchem is minus, mem yud nun vav sof, and Einechem is zehaznus. So these are the two general categories of the Chavis Halvavus in Perikei, whereas he has first a list of ideological Yetzaharas, and that would be Achrei Levavchem, zuha minus. Minus doesn't have to be, you know, whatever, the things we've been learning about these last few weeks, maybe it's called already months, about is there life after death, and does the neshama stay, and how many Hashem, and etc. And we're in the middle now of learning about the integrity of Torah Shabbal Peh, that we're in the middle of learning about. So that's Achrei Levavchem, and then he starts with Achrei Einechem, is a person who wants to have a good time in life. And in that, it starts off very gross, and then now the word gross is appropriate, is the right word, and then it gets more and more and more subtle. And you know, the taiva we have for kavod, which is already more subtle, and that's the way you conduct yourself with your in your relationships, because you want kavod, you want recognition, and why you're doing things. And this is already in the realm of Achrei Einechem, because it's Zuz Nus, which we're defining now as being the realm of Taivus, of Maisa, but it gets more and more subtle. And really, this Perikei is a Musa Sefer in itself, as is many parts of the Chavis Halvavus. So we're in the middle of, if you would count them and number them, we're actually up to number 6, which is about the Mesoros of Torah Shabbal Peh. And maybe we say, oh, you know, that's Reform rabbis or conservative rabbis or the Tzdukim, but not us. I am a good Jew. So that's true. You are very good Jews. But sometimes, you know, we say, well, where does it say that you have to do this? And who said it's so important if this? And, you know, is it that important that we, this, and, you know, these are all questions that pop up in our minds. Or maybe our children ask us these questions and we don't have the right answers. And they have these questions, and maybe they have someone to answer them, and maybe they don't. So, I'll start from the beginning of the paragraph, but we really have learned around half of it last week. Which was the previous one, which was the integrity of Torah, and there are no footprints in the sand in Har Sin and Mount Sinai. So what do you mean there were 3 million people standing there? Oy vey, I just made you happy Kursim. Yisapik Oscha B'Kabbalah, he'll make you doubt Torah Sheba'al Peh, because Torah Sheba'al Peh, you know, there's a whole world of Torah Sheba'al Peh. We're not aware of it because Torah Sheba'al Peh has long been written down. So everything's in writing. But if you follow the progression, who was the first to write it down and who said it's true, so we're all relying on the chain of Kabbalah. Last week we spent a lot of time talking about why Hashem structured Torah in such a funny way, that there's Torah Sheba'al Peh and Torah Sheba'al Peh. We don't appreciate that enough because we don't have any more Torah Sheba'al Peh. Only if we go back to the roots of all of, virtually all the Sfarim in any Hebrew library, in the shul, anywhere, in any Beis Medrash, if you follow the roots of that Sefer, you most often bump up, almost always, bump up against Torah Sheba'al Peh. You don't bump up against Torah Sheba'al Peh. We talked about the Malbim and the Amar Benel and Rav Shamshon Afal Hirsch, who really went to combat, in their Perishim HaChumash, they really combated this Yetzirah, even though by then it was Torah Sheba'al Peh. But again, if you trace back the roots, it's called Rabbinic Judaism, and Ezra HaSofer made it up, and all that kind of stuff that you either know or you don't know. And they showed how embedded in Torah Sheba'al Peh is Torah Sheba'al Peh. They wrote remarkable works, again, the Malbim, the Netziv and HaMekdobar, and Rav Shamshon Afal Hirsch, to a great degree. There's also other Svarim, Aksava Kabbalah, there's other Svarim, but these stick in my mind right now. And they, that was the Yetzirah, and you know, in those Doiris, that was the Haskalah, and that was the great battle. And if you look at our history, that had probably many more, the whole Haskalah movement had so much more karbanos than the Tztukim, you know, or even the Karoim, you know. They were battles, but the Klal Yisrael never looked like it did in the last 100 years, 200 years. It's very sad. Very sad. We're, you know, so the battle was about Kabbalah. Now the battles today. The battle, you got to go deeper into the Perek for today's battle. I don't think anybody cares that much about. You know, you still have some Reform rabbis. What did the Rabbi Kahana Zatzal used to say? There's no such thing as a Reform Jew. There's only Reform rabbis. No, a Jew is a Jew. Either observe the Torah or you don't observe the Torah. That's all. But it's all it's Reform rabbis, no Reform Jews. B'yayim melecha, and the Yetzirah will tell you, ki hamuskel v'hakosuv shnei hamemes, he'll say, okay, I'll grant you Tanakh, but I'll raise you one. Avol mashamru avoseinu zechonam levracha, what they cited, eino ikar, it's not important. Below kibulochova, it's a nice interpretation. Who says we have to follow the rabbi's interpretation? There could be other interpretations, and sometimes this actually skirts. We accept that point sometimes, right, maybe, and some people can't handle it so well. If you've ever learned Nach, and you've ever learned Radak, or Malbim, or anybody, they many times interpret the Pasuk not like Chazal. Because we have the Kabbalah. See, there goes the Kabbalah again. We have a Masorah that we are free to interpret. You can't look at a Pasuk and say, this is what the Rambam was really, this is what they, when they attacked the Rambam for many of the things he wrote in Moreh Nevuchim, you know, they were afraid that someone's going to look at Lo Tochal Chazir and say, oh, it doesn't mean Chazir. It means disgusting things, and it doesn't really, Avram really wasn't a person. He was a composite of four different people, which they mamish do say. Certainly not Moshe Rabbeinu, they say it. What? Who says it? I don't want to say who says it. I don't want to say their names because I can't pronounce it. It's usually a German name. But anyway, but we do it. If you learn Nach, and you know, the first time a good Haredi yeshiva boy learns Nach, and the Radak says, yeah, Chazal say this, but I'm telling you what it really means. He goes like, and he runs out of the room. Apikoyres! Apikoyres! You know, so why am I laughing? Because it's accepted that when it comes to Pshat and the Pasuk, and it's not Nogeya Halacha, we're free to interpret it the way we think is the most logical. So you have to be mature, because once it affects halacha, like, you have to say, look, this is what I think Pshat and the Pasuk is, and this is the word. I mean, the Malbim's, you know, is always saying different Pshatim in the Pasuk than the Gemara. If it's not Megel halacha, and... See, but this is dangerous. I'm really telling you the dangerous thing, because then someone will say, well, then I don't think Avram was really a person, and it seems to be more logical that there never really was an Akedah, and it was maybe just a vision. And then the Rambam starts with what he said, and he was attacked so vehemently for suggesting that certain stories in Chumash didn't happen, but they were visions. That's what he seems to be saying. And then he was attacked because it's only what? Eov already was safe, because the Gemara says maybe it never happened, and it's just a marshal. So if the Gemara says maybe it never happened, it's just a marshal, you know, we're cool with that. That's, the Gemara could say what it wants. Not fair, but it could. But the Rambam really skirted very dangerous ground, and he was the irony is that the Rambam was the bulwark of saving Judaism from the Karoim and the Karaites, and there was such a split because they had big Talmid Chachamim that had a certain Shita, and there was a big division in the name, and it came into play by the calendar. I mean, if you ever want to study history, we're going to Chas v'Shalom, you know, if Klal Yisrael would look like today, with the amount of Orthodox people that there are, we would have pushed two calendars and went to Pesach, Shavuos, two different calendars, because they wanted to go away from the Cheshbonos with Hillel, the calendar, it was terrible. And the Rambam, you know, so that's the irony of the Rambam. It's ironic. That's a genius. Now we look at the Rambam and he's like inviolate, you know. But b'shaito, the Rambam was very controversial. And so, you know, a genius can walk between the raindrops and say that maybe this was a vision and it didn't really happen, and then be the biggest fighter and ultimate victor over the Karoim, because of the sheer force of the greatness of the man. He was like Hanesher HaGadol, they called him, like the great eagle. And he put them in Cherem, you know. And at one point, he put them in Cherem. And he said, you're not going to marry their children. And he just built a wall. At some point, you have to do that. Getting back to here, there is a lot of intellectual freedom in Yiddishkeit. You know, people say, you know, open any sefer and there's like three machleksim on every page. And so much freedom is given in interpretation of Tanakh, you know, if you don't touch halacha. And, you know, so there's a lot of intellectual freedom. And Adarabba, we are told that Moshe Rabbeinu in those 40 days, and someone brought this up last week, was taught everything that would... He was taught what the Radak says. He was taught what the Radak is going to say in his door, and it won't be like the Gemara. Why do I say that? Because the Radak is accepted by Klal Yisrael as the Radak, as a great figure, as an honest Erlacha from Talmud Chacham, Gaon, Gadol, leader, figure. The Radak is the Radak. Like, you know. So Moshe Rabbeinu was thought that he would say that. You know, this is not the class to really delve into the subtleties of, you know, what can you say and what can't you say, and at what point. I'm just saying, my point is to say that there is a lot of intellectual freedom, but it as like everything else, it's like saying the Torah is capitalistic, but there's rules governing the capitalism. It's not what they taught me in school, laissez-faire. See, my teacher would be so proud of me. I still remember that word. Laissez-faire, I pronounced it wrong, actually. I think it's laissez-faire capitalism. But so the Torah doesn't do that. The Torah has capitalism with qualifications and socialism with qualifications. The Torah is perfect. The Torah is Hashem Tmima, Meshivas Nofesh. So if you, Torah is perfect society. There's a king, but the king is Meshubet to the Torah also. Like, it's great. The Torah is the way it's supposed to be. It's impossible. I don't know. So a vegetarian will say that the Torah also only gives permission to eat meat grudgingly. But it's clear in the Torah that it's grudgingly, and that's not the way it's supposed to be, and the Mauritian wasn't allowed to eat meat, etc., etc. Okay, we're getting too far afield here. So the Yetzirah has room to make even from people wonder about, you know, if it's so terrible, if there's a dot on the esrog. I always like to say that same marshal. Maybe I should get a new one already. If there's a bump on the luluf. If your tefillin ritzuos, you don't know if the tefillin ritzuos are not black, it's a huge problem. People are not careful enough. The ritzuos have to be totally black. If there's a part of it that's not black, it might be puzzle. Tefillin might be puzzle. Now the blackness could wear off into brown, and then it starts looking like rust colored, reddish brown. Sometimes a Sefer Torah, the letters wear, the ink doesn't keep holding, you know, decade after decade after decade. Anyway, so you wonder sometimes, what am I doing here? Whether it may be you're checking for bugs, right? We'll bring it down to a woman's like, you're not checking the esrog, but you're checking the lettuce. It was the same mitzvah. Actually, lettuce is much worse, much more important. I shouldn't say more important, because lettuce is a lav, and a lot of lavim. And the esrog is a mitzvah saseh. So just by virtue of that equation, I know the lettuce is more important than the esrog.
But,
yeah, that's true.
Lettuce,
I'm not sure what that, okay.
Usually,
you mean you don't eat it, it's not ingested into your body. Yeah, okay, then it's a mitzvah saseh, and a lav is always considered much heavier than a mitzvah saseh. Anyway, I just don't want you to be jealous of the men who are looking at their esrogim. But now the men could buy an esrog from the shul, and I did a terrible thing. I took all the omol and yegia out of buying dalad minim. I had a cheshmer for doing it, and you can buy gush katif lettuce. So everybody gains. So the Yetzirah says, "Im lo tagdir lanu akabola tira." He says, it's so easy to refute Yetzirah because Torah Shabbat makes no sense without Torah Shabbat Peh, because you don't know what anything means. There isn't what we're in the the paragraph starts with the words v'chasher yisyoish mimucho v'inyan hazeh. Yisapek oscha b'kabbalah. V'yom alecho ki ha-muskel v'ha-kosuf shneyem emes. Ach ma-shomu rabbeseinu zirchonim l'vrocha. What they said, enu ikav lo kibulo cholva. Okay? Do you have it? V'chashet t'stakal b'sichlcha. But if you follow your logic, tireh, you will see ki ha-muskel v'ha-kosuf, even when you consider logical, like you can't murder somebody, or you have to do favors for people, or you have to give charity. And certainly, v'hakosuv, you have to take challah, you have to wear tefillin, you have to have a mezuzah. Tzrichin ala kabbalah tzorech gadol. We would not be able to move without Torah Sheba'al Peh. We would have no idea what to do. Of course, there had to be a Torah Shabbat. There had to be an interpretation of all these words that really don't tell you lamaisa what to do. Came echad mehem, not even one mitzvah, not a lav, yochel igamer mibli kabbalah. You say, what do you mean? You're not allowed to murder. Okay, what happens if you murder a murderer? Is that called murder? Are you allowed to kill a murderer? What about an abortion? What about if the mother's life is in danger? What about killing someone who's going to kill someone else? What about killing someone who's going to hurt someone else? Are you allowed to, what about someone who's chasing after a girl, chas v'shalom? Are you allowed to kill that person? It says you're not allowed to murder. Like, you need, there's nothing in the Torah that we would on our own be able to decide, and that's why, you know, I think there's still a column in the New York Times, the ethicist, right? So they just make up things. They don't know. They don't know values. They're not driven by a God-given Torah. They just, in Yiddish, it's called a boich svara. A boich svara. You know, boich is a stomach. It means the svara is not coming from here. It's coming from here, boich svara. Actually, you can buy a very fine book. Really, it's called The Jewish Ethicist. The Jewish Ethicist. And he copies the style, if you're acquainted with the column in the Times, he copies the style of the ethicist, and he asks such questions: my boss brought in an employee, and they're taking over my job, you know, all kinds of ethical questions. But he very, very competently examines it from the viewpoint of halacha and from the viewpoint of Torah. I forgot the guy, maybe Rabbi Meyer, I forgot his name, but it's called The Jewish, what?
But that's not published in the Times.
I'm sorry? No, not published in the Times. Maybe it's published in the Jewish Times. No, I don't see it published anywhere, but it's a very wonderful book. It really, and it takes these ethical questions, not like, you know, what's the din if I'm lighting Nero's Shabbos, you know. It's ethical questions. What do I do if my neighbor knocks on my door? And, you know, is it okay to lie in such a case? So the ethicist will tell you what that person, whoever's writing the column that month or that year, what they hold. It's like such a ridiculous premise that there's some probably goy, maybe Jew, who's sitting there telling you his idea of ethics. It's a joke to us. But this book takes like those types of situations, mamish, like ethics, and tells you, goes through the halacha with you, and tells you what the Torah. I'm not saying it's a poisek achron and everything in that book you could take to the bank, like Psukim from Avol Yashiv. I'm not saying that, but it's very good. Like I do it sometimes by the Shabbos table, and you know you want to see how our minds work, and then what the Torah says about it. You know, oh, my heart goes out to that lady, she has such a problem, you know. And then the halacha says, yeah, she has a problem, but it would impinge on the rights of someone else if, you know, you understand the type of things that could come up. So, anyway, so there's nothing in the Torah. You're not allowed to murder, you have to lend money to someone who needs it. Nothing can be, you can't get anywhere without Torah Shabbat Peh. Who should you lend money to first? Or is it Din Kadima? Should you lend money to a poor person? If they're making enough to scrape by, but their lives are very mitzumtzum. Or a rich person wants to borrow money from you to expand his business. It's not so poshut who comes first. Once the ani is making ends meet, you know, and is living, and you know, they want to borrow money, and you're not so sure that he can pay you back, because he doesn't have room. If he could pay you back, he wouldn't have to borrow. The businessman needs a $25,000 loan. Maybe that's very small peanuts to the people in this room. I don't know. To me, that's like a large amount of money, $25,000. So maybe that person needs a lot of money, and he can't get it so easily. So he's going to invest it, and whatever. The Chavis Halacha says there is not one mitzvah in the Torah that we would know what to do if not for Torah Shabbat Peh. I'm just elaborating that it's Ben Adam Lachaveiro, as well as Binodum Lamokom. No matter how plain and simple and logical you think a mitzvah is, there are always qualifications and conditions and scenarios. It's never ending, because Torah is everything. Torah covers the whole universe. It's not like you can't come up with something that's not covered by the Torah. Even if the Torah doesn't talk about microwaves, and it doesn't talk about Shabbos clocks, and the Gemara doesn't talk about, but that's silly. Anybody who has any experience learning knows that all the principles are there. There's no, you have thousands, millions of tshuva svarim written, and no one said, I don't know, beats me. Like, I don't know, I throw up my hands, I don't know, the Gemara doesn't talk about this case. The Gemara doesn't talk about a Shabbos lamp. I don't know if it's muktzah or not. I looked through my whole Shas. Now a guy wrote a very fine index for Shas. I looked through the whole index. It doesn't say Shabbos clock. It doesn't say Shabbos lamp. What?
It didn't exist.
Right. So then you don't know what to do. So of course all the principles are in Torah. And that's amazing. I mean, yeah, just an hour days of Moshe. Rav Moshe, and Rav Nissim Karelitz, and Rav Yashiv, thousands of tshuvas. So everything's in the Torah, and it covers everything, which is the way it should be, because the Torah is, as we say, the blueprint of the universe. So how could it engenders everything? So how could there be something that the Torah doesn't cover? Torah was first. So he says, "Lo yitochin lo nemitzat zechlenu b'levad." So he just, in terms of combating the Yetzirah, you just tell the Yetzirah that it's not logical. Because remember, we're up to the point where you believe that there's a God, and you believe He took us out of Mitzrayim, and you're believing already that the Chumash is true. So you just tell the Yetzirah, "Come on, it makes no sense, and it's totally illogical, and it's absurd that there wouldn't be a Torah Sheba'al Peh." That's all. You, when he hammers you, that how do you know in so many thousands of years, and how could you know that it's true, and etc., you just turn around and wipe the floor with him, just in terms of logic. Nowadays, logic doesn't work, as we know, because we're learning Shar HaBechina. And every once in a while, someone gives a little yelp and says, "How could they not believe in God? Like, look at this! Like, how could they not believe in Hashem?" But they manage very nicely. The scientists I'm talking about, who know immeasurably more than poor us sitting there around a table on Sunday afternoon, right, learning a tipa shebiyam of the flows habori. So here also, you know, poor Chayvus Halvavus, you know, the world has passed him by. He keeps talking about logic, and he even puts logic first in the pecking order, in Seichel, in the pecking order of Torah. I mean, meaning the Torah wants you to first use your head, and second, the Torah, and third, the Masorah, the written Torah. Second, the Torah is everything. I'm talking about the written Torah. So, Nebuch, so, you know, for him, it's not enough. Nowadays, people don't care. People, what they call cognitive dissonance, they just don't care. So now you need a Netziv, and you need a Malbim. Maybe that'll speak to people. Well, they'll show that it's there. And not only they'll show that it's there, but they'll show how it's embedded in Torah Shebiksav. I told you, Avshalom Shem Fol Hirsch's famous marshal of a student taking notes of the lecture. So, you know, he's just making marks on a piece of paper, and they represent the whole elaboration of the professor. So here too, that's what the Malbim and the Netziv and the Shem Shavol Hirsch and others also did. They showed how the Torah was like, took notes. And this Vav represents like 3 hours of lecturing by the professor is represented by that pen mark on a piece of paper. So, but the Chavis HaLavas doesn't go into that. He just says, just tell the Yetzirah, about the absurdity of there not being a Torah Sheba'al Peh. It's absurd. The Torah would be rendered a meaningless mush without Torah Sheba'al Peh. Im lo tagdir lanu hakabola kamuso ve'echuso uzmano umakomo, we wouldn't be able to move. Ushar and Yonov. Lo yitochen lanu mitzat sechleinu bilvad. As much as there's primacy of seichel, but seichel is not going to tell you what the Torah means when it says ukshartom liosal al yodecha v'ayulu totafos b'neinecha. Now, I want to qualify what I'm saying. Because someone might say, wait a second, so how can Avraham Avinu, a very good question, almost as good as your question from last week, how can Avraham Avinu do Kol HaTorah Kula? He didn't have a Kabbalah from anyone. That means he did figure it out. So the Chavis HaLov is not talking about Avraham Avinu. Yes, the Torah is embedded in the Bria. And if you theoretically, an Avraham Avinu type can figure out the Torah from the Bria. That's what you see from Avraham Avinu. And that also has a logic to it, because Torah is embedded in the Bria, but it's the blueprint of the Bria. So you could. What do you mean? How am I going to figure out that you're supposed to eat matzah? To us, it's like ridiculous and fairy tale. But Avraham Avinu ate matzah the night of the 15th of Nisan. And no Yetzias Mitzrayim yet, but that's what the Beis Halevi already explains, that Yetzias Mitzrayim happened because you have to eat matzah the 15th night of Nisan. Not we eat matzah because Yetzias Mitzrayim happened.
No.
Nowhere does it say it. He figured it out. The Gemara's lashon is Nasu Shtechil Yosov. First of all, if it would have been Nevuah, that means there would have been a Matan Torah before Matan Torah.
And
there wasn't. The Gemara. Let me finish the words of the Gemara. Nasu Shtechil Yosov, his two kidneys, because the kidneys in the Gemara, and the physiology of the Gemara is the seat of wisdom, of Chochma, of Eitza. Nasu Shtechil Yosef Kishtei Mayonos HaChochma, like two wellsprings of Chochma, and he just figured it out. So I only brought it in because, in case you know it, then you say, but Chazal is not talking about Avinu, that's my parents. He's talking about us, he's talking about people. Can someone, you know, when he says Yosecha will never be able to figure out Torah, okay, it happened in history that someone did, Avram. Now, we don't know about Yitzchak and Yaakov. Did they have it by Kabbalah from Avram and they accepted it? Or did they figure it out themselves? They hammered out their own Darkei Avodah to Hashem. But what about figuring out, like, Kol HaTorah Kula, as we call it? Okay, so we don't have to answer that question now. And the Chavis HaVavis does. Actually, in Shara Avodah Selokim, to all of those who were with us on the Sunday night Shiurim, the Chayvus HaLovus does push us to be like Avraham Avinu to a degree, and to go beyond the written Torah and the written mitzvahs, and to figure out from there the conceptual Torah, the Torah that how it's supposed to shape us and form us, and what it's supposed to do to us, and how we're supposed to be, and like all the. And this goes beyond the mitzvos, and that's when he spends the whole Shara Avodas Elokim actually toggling back and forth between the essentiality of doing the mitzvos and not saying, well, then I can dispense with the mitzvos, with the Maisa mitzvos, and that the Maisa mitzvos are just a stepping stone to a higher level of what the point of the Torah is. So that's Shavuot HaLokim, like, literally toggles back and forth between those two things. I'm just saying, when he says here that your seichel will never be able to figure out, there was a time in history where someone's seichel did, and that's Avraham Avinu. And theoretically, you would think it would be that way, because the Bria, as I said, is an offshoot of Torah. Not the 15th, you know, as funny as it sounds, but it's a terrific truth to absorb. That Yetzias Mitzrayim happened the way it happened so that the Jews would end up eating matzah the 15th night of Nisan. Because matzah represents something, and the 15th night of Nisan, there's certain forces in the universe. And this is Hashem worked it out historically, that that this would be, but if Avraham Avinu ate matzah, says the Beis Halevi, like, we're eating matzah before Yitzhak from Triumph for. Like, well, that's not called doing the Torah before it was commanded. That's called doing nothing. Like, what are you eating matzah for? What's matzah? A tasteless cracker. But we're told that he ate matzah, and he told he kept the Erev Tavshilin, like all those chazal. And he kept Kol HaTorah Kula. And, you know, so it did happen once in history, but. What? It's a machlokas, chasidim, and misnagdim. I was about to say, of course he ate kibrak. Kidneyus is a tough call, because it's, I wouldn't, he certainly kept Isurim Dirabona. That's for sure, that says in the Gemara. I'm not sure if we can call Kidneyus an Isur Dirabona. It's a Gzeira of the Gaonim, the early Gaonim, maybe even the early Gaonim, and it's hard. Maybe Rabbonin Svuroi already did it. It's not in the Gemara. So a couple of hundred years, which is almost a blank slate, the period of the Gaonim. It's like 800 years or 700 years. No. Yeah, a couple of hundred years. I'm not, but like it's a blank. It's blank to us. We never heard of these people. If you get a list of with Rabbi Padowitz made a list of the Masorah, they're like on 20 doyers there in the middle. They never heard of the Rav Chazdoy gone, and Rav this gone, and Rav that gone, and Rav that gone, and you know they. What?
He said he kept the Zeros of the
Rabbanim. For sure, he kept the Rabbanans. That's. I'm not sure a chayr of the Rabbeinu Gershom is called an Isser Drabonon. Rabbeinu Gershom, that's historical. Rabbeinu Gershom made a chayrim. So, indeed, before he made his chayrim, it's not a Drabonon. He made a chayrim. A Drabonon is a much more fundamental. So that's why I'm not sure Kidneyus might be like two wives. Kidneyus might be like two wives. I explained to Rabbi Padowitz this morning during our Seder why I think the Torah allowed two wives, but I don't want to say it publicly. I don't want to say it publicly. But it's a very, very logical thing to do. You don't know men. That's why you don't understand. You don't know men. No, well, you see, it was very rare. Even before Rabbeinu Gershom, we have to realize, even before Rabbeinu Gershom, it was very rare. The Torah allowed it, but it didn't, obviously it didn't recommend it, or more people would have done it. You see how rare it was. It was always very, very rare. They took a Pilagesh, and there was a Melech is different. That's why he has to say, Lo Yarbe, Lo Noshim. They, you know, if you'd be my chavrusa, I would pounce now. You see in the Chumash that they only did it because of very unusual circumstances. They weren't having children. They didn't just take two wives. Yaakov Avinu had two wives because of the story. He didn't just take two wives because he wanted two wives. It was always very rare. It was historically it was very rare. Okay. It's because of the men are terrible. The women are wonderful. I tell you, I'd quit the shul in a minute and become rabbi in the ladies' league. Just say the word. Okay. So, no, but I didn't want to speak that out, even though it's like a contradiction to what he says. But it's okay. Avraham Avinu was different. But it is theoretically possible. And I do remind you of Shara Avodas Elokim, where he tells you to apply your seichel to the Torah. But okay, now he's talking about Torah Shebal Peh, the necessity of Torah Shebal Peh. B'chein ha-kosuv im lo yifurish lanu elemen ha-sefer b'levad. I'm skipping the parentheses if you have parentheses. What? B'chein ha-kosuv, even if you have something written, im lo yifurish lanu elemen ha-sefer b'levad, if all that is explicit is the written one and the written word? He said Seichel would never figure out things. Then he's saying the written Torah would not give you enough information to know what to do. There are rules. Doesn't mean every svara that every person says is true. There's rules. The Shloshes Remidos is rules. For Omru Besorah Siyog LaTorah. V'od Ki HaTorah Heishiva Osanu V'chol Toldol Seher Ala Kabbalah. The Torah, you see, the Torah hints that there are questions that will come up, and the Torah nudges us, pushes us towards taking advantage and having access to Torah Sheba'al Peh. Kamosha Kosev, it says Beferish in the Torah, Ki Yipoli Mimucha Dover La Mishpat, when you don't know what to do, Yipoli means it's hidden from you. And you go to the Kohanim, Halaviyim, the Pasuk says, V'la Shofei Tashiyah Bayom HaMahem, and it goes on, Divrei Rivos B'Shorecha, V'Omar V'Dorashna V'Yidu L'Cha Yisdor HaMishpat. So the Torah has a story, a narrative, where people don't know what to do, and they go to a higher authority, a Beis Din, the Zkenim and the Shoftim, and you ask them. It's like, why do they know? Because they are the seat of Torah Sheba'al Peh. That's the Sanhedrin HaGadol and the Beis HaMikdash and the Lishkas HaGozes. And you're going to them. And the Torah is very severe with its punishment if they're not listened to. That's the Zakei Mamre. The Zakei Mamre, if he doesn't listen to Hashem and he doesn't wear tefillin, okay, he gets a slap on the wrist, relatively speaking. But if he goes against our Mesorah and he argues with the Psak of the Beis Din HaGadol, then he gets Misa. Because he's breaking down the whole infrastructure of Judaism, of Torah Judaism, which is the same as Judaism. Just wanted to clarify it, but it's the same thing. There's no Judaism without Torah Judaism. That doesn't exist, no matter how many essays are written. So, as much as they try. So the Torah is much more severe. Chavis is pointing out that you see how important a principle this is. Because the Torah is much more severe in its punishment of someone who ignores and makes a point of ignoring Torah Sheba'al Peh, and he gets Misa. And if you ignore Torah Shebiksav, so to speak, you don't get Misa. Depends what you did. Some are better, some are chamer than others. But if the Zogin Mamre paskins about something, if the Bezal HaGadol paskins something and the Zogin Mamre goes against him, so he gets Misa. And when you realize everything I've just told you, the logic, the hechrech, the absolute essentiality of Torah Sheba'al Peh, and how, oh look, the Torah itself pushes us to find out what the Chachamim of the Mesorah have to say about this. Yosur HaSafek, remember the Yosur only made a Safek. Right, we all remember that. He only has to make a suffix. He doesn't care to convince you, and you should say he's right. He only cares to make you say maybe. V'tizbar alacha, and it'll become clear to you, hayadiyya hamuskeles, logic, v'haksuva, and Torah Shebiksav, hamukubeles, as he always calls Torah Sheba'al Peh, because we went through all of this. The yadiyos hamuskolos, because he's starting to shift gears now. He's still in theology and ideology, but he's starting to shift gears away from, he's starting to shift gears. So now he makes a statement, v'tizbar lecha hayadiyya hamuskeles v'haksuva v'hamukubeles, and if you look back at the last six paragraphs, because we're up to number seven now, where we'll pick up next week, Mitzvah Shem. Tell everybody I'm back from America next week. So we're up to number seven. I know that because I wrote down the numbers and I covered the numbers. So we're up to number seven. But the first six dealt with muskolos. Could there be more than one Hashem? Is there a Hashem? Does the neshama continue to exist after death? And it dealt with haksuva, because that was actually number five. How true The Yetzirah will ask you, how true are you convinced that the Torah in front of you is? Tama Kubelis was now number 6, what he just talked about. Okay, next week.